The only danger is if they send us to that terrible planet of the apes. Wait a minute. Statue of Liberty. That was our planet! You maniacs! You blew it up! Damn you! Damn you all to hell!
And many, many sequels later, War for the Planet of the Apes was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
It is the number one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier. I'm here with some nefarious pharmaceutical executives. It's Camila Adams.
Hello.
Robin Hitchcock.
In the time of chimpanzees, I was a monkey.
Oh, that's nice.
I just want to get this out of the way. I'm going to say monkey when I mean ape in this episode. I'm going to do it. I know they're different. It's something that bothers me when other people do it, and then I do it myself. So right.
Apologies to any apes and monkeys who are listening.
Yes.
And may be offended by this. This is not a slight on you and your origin. It's just how we roll.
Yeah.
I think it might be a slight, because whenever I am like, this scene is good, I'm like, oh, I get what the apes are going for there. But when I'm frustrated, I'm like, this is monkeys. What's going on? Like,
I mean, apes are literally more intelligent than monkeys. Right, like, they are more closely related to us.
Right.
So it's not the planet of the monkeys.
Maybe it is. Yeah. Maybe it is.
Is this movie more of an ape or a monkey? We'll find out. Yeah, had we all seen this? I can't remember. Robin, you did because it was nominated.
Correct.
I thought I had, but I had not.
Oh.
Was Woody Harrelson in the second one?
No, I don't think so.
He was new.
Okay. Well, yeah, I definitely did not see this movie before.
Well, we'll have a range of reactions then, but before we do, because I think even if you saw all of these movies, and I did, I couldn't have told you which one was which until I pressed play. So we need a 60-second recap badly.
Just before we get started on that, I just want to say dawn should come before rise. Because it goes rise, dawn, war.
Right. Yes.
Rise, dawn, war.
It should go dawn, rise, war. Right? Or dawn. Like the second one is also about a war.
The first one is when, you know, the infection and James Franco and all that jazz and, you know, the birth of Caesar. So that's the rise of the apes and the dawn. It's just now dawning on the apes that they could take over. Huh? No? Okay. I don't know.
No, that makes it harder. And we'll get into why none of these are just called Planet of the Apes. That, like, by the third movie, that information seems to be unlocked. But, yes, the first one, which was called Rise, is where the apes got smart and escaped and James Franco was there. The middle one was when they were trying to establish ape society, and that's when Caesar and... King Koopa had their... big conflict. And now, Robin will tell us what happened in this movie.
Oh boy, will I.
On my mark, and go.
Okay, so it's like 10 years after the world has ended because of a pandemic, super fun, and the apes are in one society, and then the surviving humans are in their own society. And the apes are trying to figure out where their, like, ape paradise in the world will be. And then, oops, the humans attack, led by Woody Harrelson. He kills Caesar, who's the main ape's wife and son. And then it's like, well, I guess we're going to go to war with them, even though he previously did not want to go to war with them. So the humans and the apes have a war. Woody Harrelson's building a wall. It turns out that he's against other humans. And then there's a big battle. I realize I'm running out of time because I'm looking at a clock. Caesar gets murdered. But he goes through the desert forever before he dies. And all of the humans get buried in an avalanche. The end.
Oh, you had room to spare. That was 52 seconds.
All right.
Basically it.
I sort of glossed over a lot of key plot points at the end. I guess one important thing being that the new plague that is a mutation from the old plague that causes people to be mute, including a little baby girl named Nova, who that's a woman character in the original series.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, as I saw, really no point to her. It turned into three apes and a baby at some point.
Yes.
At
that point.
It was like, and see what happens when three apes adopt a lonely little girl.
And I guess you glossed over the 60-minute imprisonment / prison break.
Oh.
You know, that's the kind of the back half of this movie. Which again was when I'm pretty sure when I saw a screening of this, that is when I literally fell asleep. and this time around, where I was like, you know, I was probably being too judgmental and or I needed a nap that day. I'm sure it's better than I thought. No, I didn't. I was looking at my phone through all of that.
Yeah,
you are totally right. This movie, I like this movie, but that section of it drags.
I think the only part that I was really interested was when Woody Harrelson has his big speechify moment and he breaks down about what happens to the humans with they got mute and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Everything else was just a bunch of bullshit to me.
Also,
and I liked the first one very much. And so, I think I was so on the second one.
I barely remember the second one. I know I've seen it. This is, by the way, I realized that I watched both the first one and the second one on an airplane. So this is the only one I've seen not on an airplane, which I think does makes it make more sense why this is my favorite of the three. Oh, I have a question about the disease and Woody Harrelson's thing about it. I had this memory from the first time I watched this movie where it was like, oh, the disease doesn't really make you sick. It just makes you lose your voice. Is that not the case?
He was bleeding at the end, wasn't he?
That's exactly what I was thinking of. And I was like, is that from war? What?
I don't recall. I don't know if I missed a scene where he got beat up or something, but I mean, I'm assuming it makes you sick and then you lose your voice.
Well, so because the little girl has it, right?
Right.
And she seems fine.
Yeah, she's thriving.
But maybe she's you know, all of these people were immune to the original plague, so.
Beep, 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 beep.
Yes, correct. And I mean, the end of the Faxi segment does sort of address this question. So the facts of the matter, and then I can't actually shed light on it. I can shed, you know, half-assed fan theory light. So we'll get there. War for the Planet of the Apes was released July 14th of 2017. It was the 18th number one movie that year, winning its opening weekend with $56.2 million. The only other new release was a PG-13 fantasy horror movie called Wish Upon. I swear I've never heard of that.
I think that's the one with that little girl, Joey something.
Joey King?
Yeah. Little girl from The Conjuring?
Yeah, she's in a million. That makes sense. I definitely didn't see it, or it didn't register with me at all. That was the only other new release that weekend. It opened in seventh, $5.4 million. That was also the weekend of the limited release of an excellent movie that almost nobody saw called Lady Macbeth. It was in my top 10 that year.
Oh my god, what a great movie!
It was the debut, you know, the breakthrough performance of global treasure Florence Pugh. That's where we were all introduced to her. So. That's probably streaming somewhere. Go watch that.
That's her Winter's Bone.
Yes. War for the Planet of the Apes fell down to fourth place in its second weekend. First was the debuting Dunkirk, which made 50.5. Second was the debuting Girls Trip, which made 31.2. Third was Spider-Man Homecoming, which was 1 week older but moved up. War earned $20.8 million in its second weekend. successfully holding off another debut, the well-intentioned total whiff Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, which debuted in fifth with $17 million. I liked that movie.
I was going to say, that movie has a low enthusiasm for a cult, but it has its cult.
I've never heard of it. I'm not in the cult. Mary Beth might be in the cult. Mary Beth really, really loved it. It's very messy and dumb, and Dane DeHaan is terrible. But
Dane DeHaan is always terrible.
He's a very bad actor.
Yeah, he's bad.
Cara Delevingne makes up for it. She's a star, and she carried it, and it was cool and imaginative and space fun. Like, you know, anyway, justice for a director that does not need anyone defending him.
He's from Allentown, Dane DeHaan.
Is he?
That explains everything. I preemptively hate Allentown because they're going to overtake Pittsburgh in population, and we're going to be the third largest city in Pennsylvania, and that's going to suck. That's going to hurt my feelings.
Is that
and,
true?
Yeah. Like, what? I don't know if it's going to happen this census, but it's happening by next census. I think the main reason is sprawl. It's people live in Allentown and work in Philly. But then there's also like biotech spillover. And yeah, that whole region of Pennsylvania is gaining population and we're still losing.
Well, they already got probably not a top 10 Billy Joel song, but like a top 25. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
War for the Planet of the Apes spent 4 weeks in the top 10, finishing with $146.8 million, 22nd overall of the year. The top three of that year went Last Jedi, Beauty and the Beast, Wonder Woman. In just about every measure, this performed worse than the other two recent ones. Dawn in 2014 opened about the same, but made more, $208 million, and was 11th overall for that year. Rise opened a little bit lower, but made much more, $176 million, also was 11th that year. So War for the Planet of the Apes was the worst performing of the three, although it got the best reviews. Rise was an 82% on Rotten Tomatoes, Dawn 91%, and War 94%. These are Apes movies 7 through 9. There was the original in 68, Beneath the Planet of the Apes in 1970, Escape from the Planet of the Apes, 71, Conquest of the Planet of the Apes in 72, Battle for the Planet of the Apes in 73, and the Tim Burton remake in 2001.
Was this a story that really needs this much retelling?
I mean, really, when he finds the Statue of Liberty, we've kind of wrapped it up. Like, I don't know.
Right.
War for the Planet of the Apes, which I am now sick of saying, was nominated for Best Visual Effects at that year's Oscars, alongside Last Jedi, Kong Skull Island, fellow episode subject Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. It was won by Blade Runner 2049. It won the corresponding Critics' Choice Award. I voted for Blade Runner 2049, but my number one on the nomination ballot that year was Beauty and the Beast, because they invented that powder thing. Does anyone know what I'm talking about?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Cocaine?
Yes. specifically for the Beauty and the Beast remake, they invented like a makeup that has little tiny crystally things in it that replaces needing to wear the little cotton balls for CGI. So like now, as a result of Beauty and the Beast, you can act just with this stuff smeared on you rather than a big fancy suit.
Okay, so that's amazing.
Right.
Their end result was not very good.
Right. That's right.
I remember that, Sean, because Sean has me review his ballot before he sends it in as like a, am I really messing up?
Right.
Or like, make your case why Laurie Metcalf should be 3 instead of 2 or whatever. I was probably pushing her up. That was my favorite. As much as I love Allison Janney, that was my pick that year. Anyway, I digress. What I was going to say is that I remember you voting for Beauty and the Beast in a lot of categories and me just being like, he sees something I don't see. But so that one was a very specific thing.
That was specifically because they invented this new thing that I felt that deserves an award. No one else did. Everyone else was just like, Blade Runner glows funny. That gets you an award.
Yep.
all three of the new Apes movies were nominated only for visual effects. None won that award. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes lost to Interstellar, Rise lost to Hugo, and the original Planet of the Apes received an honorary Oscar for its makeup effects and was nominated for score and costume design. Little trivia, technically this movie had a Charlton Heston cameo from Beyond the Grave.
What?
When Maurice says Nova to the little girl, it is a digitally altered recording of Charlton Heston saying Nova in the
Boo!
Yeah. Boo.
I don't get it. Why is my question.
You know, Hollywood navel gazing.
Okay.
And speaking of navel gazing, and this ties back in, the theory is that these movies are prequels to the 1968 film.
Okay.
What the clue that I don't really buy is that Bad Ape starts wearing human clothes, and that, you know, is like supposed to give you a nod because in the original the apes wear clothes now, and that's new in these movies.
Right.
But the big one is the simian flu, as depicted in this movie, rendering humans speechless and kind of like semi-feral. That's the way that the remaining humans on the planets were in the original series. So,
and including Nova.
So right. In theory, we're seeing how the humans devolved as a result of the simian flu to set up the 1968 movie.
It was such a waste to put that little girl in here for that super mysterious nod to what's going to be the one that's next and the older one and blah, blah, blah. And so Bad Ape is the crackhead monkey.
The little one who wears a sweater and is nervous all the time.
Okay. Yeah. The crackhead.
You heard me.
And I didn't realize it. That's Steve Zahn.
What?
Yeah, I'm looking on IMDb right now.
I did not recognize his voice.
Me either.
Oh my gosh.
I have Steve Zahn is trying to save this movie in my notes. I definitely knew that one.
I find Bad Ape delightful. And it's, but one thing I will say is that this movie does not, so spoilers for the You Can't Handle the Truth portion. I watched It Chapter 2 this week. And one thing that Colin pointed out about that movie is that, like, the comic relief moments are really well timed. Mm-hmm. So, like, it doesn't feel, like, disjointed the way that, like, Avengers Age of Ultron did. It's like, oh, this is an appropriate moment for tension relief. War for the Planet of the Apes is not good at that.
No.
As much as I laughed at what Bad Ape was saying and doing and all the, and, like, a couple times Caesar cracks a joke, and it always feels like the floor fell out from under you.
Yes.
Because the rest of the movie is so grim.
I know. It's like they're trying to, it's like, oh, well, we need to like try to hit some, they're trying to hit all the points. Okay, so we've got action, we've got fantasy, we've got family, now we've got comedy. Yeah.
War, political drama.
Right. It's like y'all doing way too much. And this is why this fucking thing lasted 2 hours and 20 GD minutes.
And it feels long.
You feel every minute of it.
Yeah.
I went back and looked at, I didn't listen to the old episode, but I think there's an old episode when this came out. I didn't listen to that, but I went back and looked at my reviews, and it was the same complaint I had originally. This movie is so dire and so serious and is like a meditation on conflict and loss and revenge and the place of violence in a desperate world. And it's a fucking talking ape movie. Like, this is, I don't want to be reductive and be like, oh, if your movie has talking apes, then it can't be serious. Like, sure, I guess, but that's not what I want from my talking ape movie. Like, the series pinnacle is the only thing I remember about the middle movie, when one of them like charges into battle riding a horse for the first time and dual wielding rifles. I'm like, yeah, I'm here to see a monkey shoot things on a horse.
Yeah.
I'm not here to, like, feel the depths of Caesar's soul.
Well, it's like, I kind of felt it. Like, the first one, I remember actually shedding a tear or two for Caesar. And, like, I was really into that one. And apparently, according to my past IMDb activity, I rated both the first and the second one, like, 8 stars. So I must have really, I don't remember the second one, but I must have really got into it. And at the beginning of this one, when the soldiers are going into to attack the apes, and you see the what they have on written on the back of their helmets, like monkey killer and all that shit, that was like, I mean, of course I wasn't in Vietnam, but that's like kind of what that reminded me of, like what I mm-hmm. assume what was going on in Vietnam with like Kill Charlie, that all that bullshit.
This movie desperately wants to be Apocalypse Now.
Oh my god, and the scene like, where he's shaving his head.
Yeah, and the part where it literally says Ape Apocalypse Now, right? I'm like, yep. You went too far.
Just in case you didn't hit the, didn't catch the other notes.
Like, I in a
we're
way,
literally going to write it on the wall.
It's embarrassing. Anyway.
Well, no, and I think that, you know, because that was its clear intention, the opening sequence works. Like, it's not necessarily, you know, what I, again, not what I want from a monkey movie, but like, yeah, it works. And the, when we're getting, you know, into the invasion, that works too. But after that, because there's no levity except for awkward levity, and because it goes on and on after Caesar is captured, I'm just checked out. I don't understand why this was critically worshipped. Like I said, this was nearly 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. I know a lot of people were like, this is the pinnacle of the entire ape franchise. I don't get it.
I don't understand it at all. Like, I get how it got to be number one in the box office, sure. You know, every folks who enjoyed the first two were like, yes, I will go ahead for this on this ride. But, you know, for actual critics to be, and 100% on Rotten Tomato?
So you said 94, I think?
Yeah.
Which it might as well be 100. Like, if you follow Rotten Tomatoes scores, there's the 90s echelon, and then you go down to, like, a smattering of 70s, and then... It's like quarterly, basically. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or quartiles. Like, you very few movies you see are like, oh, 85, right? Like, mm-hmm. it because it's this up-down measure.
Right?
And I feel like this movie, while definitely not the pinnacle of any kind of cinema, I think is so, it's like solid. So I feel like most critics would ultimately go thumbs up just because it's like technically proficient.
We have the option of putting a score in on Rotten Tomatoes, which admittedly not everybody does. But when you select fresh or rotten, you can also put in out of 10, out of 5, letter grade, whatever.
Right.
And slightly more hidden on the tomato meter is the average rating, which for this is an 8.2.
Yeah.
Which
okay.
is really, again, that means half of the ratings are above 8, you know?
Right.
And I should say, especially this time around, like, my score went up from the first time I watched it because I was like, there's nothing wrong with this. You know, I can't really critique anything other than it's long and slow. It,
yeah.
Like you said, it's proficient and technically impressive and, you know, doesn't really do too many things wrong. But I'm baffled that there are people that love this movie.
I agree.
Halfway through it, I was like, there's no way I would ever watch this again. Mm-hmm. Officially now that we've already watched.
I also think that part of my affection for this movie comes because I did watch it for the Oscars Death Race. So it was like, you know, in the midst of watching all of these sad movies that are very like serious, as this movie, even though it is excessively sad and serious, felt like levity. You know what I mean? Like, that avalanche sequence is really cool. Getting to be diverted by an avalanche as opposed to, like, more death.
I wasn't clear. The guys that came at the end in the white, were they cheering because they thought all of the apes were gone? Or were they cheering because Woody Harrelson and his crew were dead?
I thought the latter was the case, but I'm not sure.
Sean's like, I don't know.
I can give you more information about whatever I was looking up on my phone at that point in the movie than I can about. And like, man, we're there for 2 hours and the fucking apes finally get away and we still have shots of them getting mowed down on the way out. Like, just let them go.
Yeah.
Like, we've already landed the gravity of
right.
your, by the way, I was about to push Steve Zahn as the new Tony Goldwyn because I was going to be like, Steve's on Crimson Tide, War for the Planet of the Apes, Ants. Steve Zahn is all over this thing. Right. Then I realized he's not in Ants. I just felt like he should be.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Damn. All right. Because I would have gladly had, you know, promoted Steve Zahn as our patron saint.
Steve Zahn is the official runner-up. If Tony Goldwyn can no longer fulfill his duties, okay. Steve Zahn will become.
I was like, do not put up false idols, because Tony Goldwyn could easily smite us.
Smite us down.
There he is. Hi, Tony.
So that's what happens. You say his name three times, he appears. In a cardboard cutout form.
I don't even know what to bring up. At one point I wrote down, if they're not going to give the apes clothes and they're not going to talk all that much, they need some distinguishing features, because I don't know who the hell is who. Hats, maybe little hats.
It's just too much, because, and then all the signing, too, that was really, like, that made it feel much longer to me as well. I'm just still, like, just all kinds of messed up on the whole, my hatred, it's full on hatred now for this movie, was Nova. There was no need for this child. She brought all of that just to have a nod to the original films. It's because I thought, I mean, that's basically kind of what I thought. I just assumed, okay, so she's not really doing much in this film. So right. I assume that they thought they were going to make a bunch more money or whatever, and there was going to be another series, and she was going to lead the charge for the apes and all that shit. But apparently I was wrong in the timeline, and this was the these are the prequels to the, but, you know, I can't, it's making my head hurt.
Camila, I have a couple things to respond. The first is, I think that girl, like, that's like a trope. Right? Like, mm-hmm. of the one little girl who's, in the post-apocalyptic society, like, right. specifically I'm thinking about Aliens right. and that video game.
Resident Evil?
The Last of Us. Which I've never played. I just am familiar with through pop cultural osmosis. But the second thing I want to say is that I think that you're right, because also I think that if this movie made a zillion dollars, they'd keep making them.
Right. So exactly.
I think you're onto something.
That's what I was, because, I mean, yeah, she didn't do much at all, and I lost my train of thought.
It felt a little bit to me like, you know, the series has a main character. I don't know if they were planning on doing more or not. Why did they kill him off, you know, in kind of a story that didn't add much? You know, at the end of the middle movie, the apes have made a society. And at the end of this movie, the apes have made a society. And so
a different spot.
Why did we get rid of Caesar, who successfully survived a battle, traveled, as you pointed out, Robin, traveled for, I don't know, dozens of miles, and then love story dramatic died at the most interesting possible moment at the end? Why?
I think that was supposed to bring the house down in tears. There was not supposed to be a dry eye in the house, because is that an orangutan? Was the way his response when he saw, you know, how mortal the wound was. And he was just like, like he, you know, basically clutched his pearls, like, no, not you, Caesar, no!
Doesn't it seem like they've gone through the desert for 40 years?
Yes. And I thought, well,
is that a second mortal wound? Did he heal from the first one?
That's what I was thinking. I was like, it took him a long ass time to die from this thing. Like, he made it all this way just to die when you got there? Okay.
Yeah, for the second time in three episodes, my score is dropping as we talk. Every time someone points out something, I'm like, yeah. And I mean, if you are a lover of this movie, hit us up on Twitter and tell us we're missing, because we're missing something. And now it's four of us, because I think I said I saw this in the theater with our former co-host, Aaron Kleiber, and we both walked out saying, yeah, that wasn't really good. This series has lost its way.
Mm-hmm.
expecting that that's what everyone would say. And then it got great reviews all over the place. So now the three of us and Aaron are all having this reaction. Who are the people who love us and love this and why?
Just to be clear, I do like this movie.
I do kind of like this movie. Like, this movie's okay.
And like I said, I'm fairly certain it's my favorite of the three with the new ones. I am surprised that the critical consensus is as high as it is, but I'm not surprised that this is generally well regarded.
See, that's the thing. So that's, to me, that's like two different, that's the line in the sand. Like, you like it for whatever entertainment reasons that you found it entertaining. You know, in no way do you find it critically acclaimed. This is not cinematic genius, correct? Am I correct in saying that?
No, I think it's very well made.
But just for, I understand fans, people enjoying it, but I don't understand as like critics being like, fuck yeah, this is the shit. So that's what, that's what I'm confused upon.
So I think for me, imagining me as a critic, the things where I would say like, this is genuinely good, are like the action sequences and like the war sequences, I think are very well produced. Like, they're well directed and edited. Mm-hmm. The sound is good. I think the visuals are good. And I genuinely find like the end sequence with the explosion and the avalanche, like I got goosebumps and I've seen it before. And then I think that people, even 3 years ago, we're still really enamored with the whole "wow, Andy Serkis can move his face very precisely" phenomenon.
I mean,
so I think that that was still getting a bump even into 2017. It seems like we've slowly all accepted that, like, that is an actor's work now,
right?
And like, thank you, Andy Serkis, for your service in as like the Al Jolson of micro dot acting.
Right, because this is true, because I remember being like, because I guess the first one was 2011, I think, it came out, and that was like mind-blowing to me at that point. It was like, oh my god, Andy Serkis is like killing this. And just to be able to pull the amount of emotion from me that he did, you know, in a monkey in monkey CGI, that was, I mean, he did a great job. And you know what, and I don't have, like, you know, the acting was not bad in this film at all. Yeah, you know, even like Woody Harrelson, I want to not like him, I think, but
I adore him.
But this, when he came on screen, this movie was not, this is confirmed. It's like, you know what? I will watch just about anything with Woody Harrelson in it. You know what? I would kick it with him.
Yeah. On the record. You know, and I think I want to not like him, but I can't help it, is like the story of his career, right? Because like, you know, when it was like, no one can replace Coach and this guy, right? And then it was like, oh, like, no, he's so charming.
Like, he's so much better. So like, the acting was great. The direction was great. It does have amazing action sequences. But despite all of that, I hate this movie.
Okay. And I, this is one of those things where I'm like, yeah, I like this movie, but I totally understand hating it.
Yeah, I think the script is just a little bit lacked for me.
It's thin.
A rare let's go to a establishment review. The establishment, man. Sorry, I phrased that badly. But from the New York Times, the Contemporary Review, War for the Planet of the Apes is the grimmest episode so far and also the strongest. A superb example, rare in this era, of sloppily constructed, commercially hedged cinematic universes, of clear thinking wedded to inventive technique in popular filmmaking. Each episode has pursued a stark ethical or political problem, and each has shifted the moral ground from human to ape. Okay.
It sounds like word salad.
Yeah, and also it was just a massive subtweet of Marvel movies, and like,
yeah, it was.
Okay, good for you, critic. You're so highbrow.
Right.
It's like you just, Scott, stay retired. No.
It's like he wrote his review and then he just kind of hit the source and replaced all of
the writer's work.
Yeah. Let's rate it, because when we rate it, I'll never have to think about it again. I'm, like I said, it's not a bad movie. I'm actually moving up slightly from my original rating because there's nothing wrong with it. I just, like, most of my, I'm showing through Skype to my co-host, the podcast audience can't see this. Usually I fill a whole page with notes during a movie. in the middle of this page, I stopped and just wrote, I don't care, very big. So I gave it a 53.
I would like you to take a photo of that and tweet it after this is posted. I give it a 32.
I give it a 60, so I sound so much more positive than all of y'all. But yeah, I mean, this movie's just, it's fine, it's good. The end.
Didn't you hear the New York Times? It's a superb political, you know.
Doobity-doop with the muckety-mucks, and it likes the stuff with the flourishes.
So, the flourishes. The flourishes, damn it, the flourishes. 48 and a third. 48 and change is the final score.
That feels right.
Yeah. That seems to represent our feelings, which are, that's the noise.
It's basically, no thank you.
I have a Planet of the Apes anecdote that I want to tell.
By the way, before you go, I will only note that somehow we have landed on the exact same number two of the last 3 weeks. Both War for the Planet of the Apes and Stigmata are a 48.33.
Interesting.
Okay, now. Planet Ape anecdote from Robin.
So when the 2001 remake came out,
Mark Wahlberg.
Yes, Mike Rubino, friend of the podcast, made a T-shirt, and he was like, I don't know. I want to say he was like 13 at the time, and he's younger than us.
Oh my god!
I know. Anyway, he made a T-shirt that said "I Heart Apes." Got one of his comedy buddies, because 13-year-old Mike Rubino had comedy buddies, sure, who could drive to pick him up, and they went to see the movie together. So I heard this story from Larry, the guy who drove him to see this movie, and the way that Larry tells it, he's like, I had never seen little Mike look so upset and drained of joy.
Oh, buddy.
There's that Dan Harmon, admittedly problematic figure, your mileage may vary, tells a story about him and friends going to see The Phantom Menace and being so pumped, just like, you know, event ready, like full of glee, buzzing as they're sitting down. And then one turned to the other right before the opening crawl and went, yeah, but what if it's bad? And the mood sank. And it stayed that way.
There was an article, I think it was on like Ain't It Cool News, speaking of problematic, but something like that, where it was like 3 or 4 months before it came out, What If It Sucks was the headline. And the response was so enthusiastically, there's no way it will suck. Like, how dare you even think such a thing?
Whoops.
And I remember feeling that way. And we learned.
We sure did. Don't at us. just briefly again on the weird numeral here, through 37 films that we've discussed, these two from the last 3 weeks are the only matching scores. Both Stigmata and War for the Planet of the Apes are exactly 48 and a third. If you're keeping score at home, and I know at least one of you is, hi Chad, I am giving this slight nod to Stigmata because it has the highest individual score. Camila gave Stigmata a 65. That is the highest of any number given to any of these. So update your scorecards accordingly. That's weird.
Oh, wow.
It's the exact same number. Maybe this is just the quarantine flattening. Like, our reaction to most things is kind of like, oh, yeah, sure.
This is fine.
Whatever. I mean...
It is so funny, though, that we get this, like, post-pandemic apocalypse movie.
Right. It's like, maybe it just made me think too much about normal times. It's like, right. I hate you, movie. This is why I'm pissed off at the movie, really. It's
like... right after we drew it, but before I watched it, Andy Secunda tweeted a video of him saying, like, what a great time to watch Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And then, like, there's a clip from the movie, which is just, like, them doing a montage of what happened to the world post-pandemic. And it just cuts back to his face being like, anyway, it was very, very amusing and well-timed.
Yeah.
Let's go to the bingo card where I don't think we're checking anything off.
I don't think so. What a super waste of a movie, man. Yeah. This movie.
is the notion of an ape society inherently a fish out of water?
I'm gonna go with no.
Yeah. I mean, if Nova were a real character, she would be a fish out of water, but she's not. So. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Wow. This movie officially was just no need for it whatsoever. It's useless to me. All the other. Yeah.
Well, we'll hopefully draw a better one in a little bit. In the meantime, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. If you're new, one, that's where we just talk about other things we watched. Two, it's called that because that used to be the name of this podcast when we talked about new things we watched. No one asked. There's an explanation anyway. Robin, you teased yours, so kick it off.
I saw It Chapter 2, which is on HBO, and I loved the first one, and I did not expect to. I'm not that big into horror movies. But it was one of those things where I watched it and I was just like transfixed and I loved every second of it. I didn't want to see this one in the theater because, again, I'm not super into horror movies. I wanted to be safe at home. Mm-hmm. And then I kept putting off watching it because of the pandemic and just being like, I don't want to watch this sad thing about bad feelings.
Right, right.
But the time came. What I did not realize is that the time of that movie is 3 hours.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
What? What? And like, I literally had no idea, and I kept thinking it was about to end for like the entire last hour. I'm like, oh, they're walking into the final fight. This is gonna happen. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Anyway, I think I saw that in the theater too.
I truly, like, it felt like The Irishman. Like, it just, it never ended. And I think it's a good movie. I think it's well done, but I just cannot get over how stupidly overlong it is.
Yeah.
Particularly when, you know, if you look at the original, you know, the original two-part series, miniseries, there's the first part, which is good, and then the second part, which no one remembers because it's useless. And so, why did the second part last for 3 hours? Like, we could have got out of there in a tight 90.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then they come back, they're grown up, and they defeat him.
Right. Yeah, right. We're good. I thought it was fine. A lot of people hated it.
I definitely did not hate it.
I didn't hate it. I think my only gripe was that I didn't feel like the entire thing, I didn't feel it as a horror movie. I thought of it more like a psychological thriller or even just a thriller in general. And once I did that, once I was like, okay, it's not a horror film, then I enjoyed it much more.
Because it's funny at stretches. Bill Hader's really funny.
Oh, he's great. He's amazing.
That's what I was saying earlier in the episode. It's very well timed, the right. comic relief. Like, I think it's a very, in some ways they write it so tightly that how come they didn't make it a reasonable length for a film. Like, it's clear the screenwriters sort of know what they're doing. So why did they just take that one step out of their job?
Right.
I still might read it. Like, I'm into year two of reading a lot of Stephen King, and I got the extended version of The Stand, which is more of a commitment than it. So
wow.
I could get to have more my own opinions on the weird scene where they all have sex. That's the one thing I know about from the book because people complain about it so often.
What?
Am I spoiling something?
What? I'm never going to read the book. Like
apparently they're still children, right?
Come on.
In the middle. I mean, apparently the book jumps around in timeline. I don't know where it happens in the book, but like in the middle of the story, when they've just defeated him in the sewer as children, there's apparently a long scene where they need to all bang to like connect enough. And so they just take turns.
Wait a second.
As 13-year-olds.
I would really, really love to stop thinking about these young people having sex, but do the boys have sex with each other or do they
No.
Like,
No, it's one after the other. Yeah.
Ugh, I feel so gross and icky right now.
Yeah, what can we do to fix this? How can we...
Excuse me while I peel off my skin.
I mean, having read a bunch of Stephen King books, there is required to be one chapter where you're like, what's wrong with you?
What happened to you?
Yeah, why were you thinking this? And drugs, then why did you write it down? And then why did you keep that in there when you sent it to the people? Yeah, that's...
I think it's always drugs.
It's...
Or the memory of drugs for latter-day sober king.
Yeah. Have you read Nosferatu by his son?
Oh, was it good?
Actually, it was good. It's extremely long-winded, like, you know, you would imagine any child of Stephen King would be, but but it was
really good. That has a series. That has a series of Shudder.
Yes.
Hey, segue. You can't handle the truth. I know that every other week I'm like, here's this great new thing on Shudder. And it's not new. I just finally on this past Friday night joined the Joe Bob Briggs cult. I somehow was never, like, I knew who Joe Bob Briggs was when Monster Vision was happening on TNT. When that came back on Shudder, I had vague awareness of that guy that talks about B-movies has a thing again. I turned it on, and within half an hour, I was like, I love this with all of my being. It's just the way that this man knows about it's not just that he knows about Chopping Mall, which was the one I was watching. It's that well down the crew list of Chopping Mall, and he didn't look this up. He just knows all of this. Wow. It's such a beautiful celebration of B-movie history. And I just love the, like, hey, it's Friday night and we're watching scary movies and having a couple beers. The whole aesthetic of it is great.
That's awesome.
There's a whole lot of it on Shudder right now. They did a marathon, then they did a season with some holiday pop-ups. Now they're in the middle of the second season. Especially now when there's little to look forward to in the course of a week. Turn it on at 9 p.m. and you're going to get a folksy fun double feature. I'm so, so super into it. I want to go meet him at a convention.
Cool.
I remember watching him on TNT when I was babysitting.
Yeah. He occasionally has a bad take, like everyone over 55, but but he's clearly a really smart guy that really thinks about movies and just uses that depth of knowledge to talk about. We're getting ready to watch the second half of last week's double feature on blood-sucking freaks. It's like, I am going deep and explaining why knives are thrown at butts in this movie. I'm so into it.
I did not watch anything new. I've started going through and just watching all of my movies in alphabetical order.
Ooh.
Ooh.
And this is just the Blu-ray, just the Blu-rays, because there's Blu-rays and there's regular DVDs that I did not move over. So I've started with the Blu-rays, and I just finished 300 and am on to, and Alexander is next, which
one is that?
It's the shitty one with Colin Farrell and Angelina Jolie and Val Kilmer and like everybody in Hollywood. And it's like 18 hours long.
I've never seen it.
It's bullshit. And the only reason why I own it, and I'm like, you know, that was part of the 3-pack. And it was like 300, Alexander, and Troy. So I was like, okay. So like for $5, I can get 2 out of 3 that I really enjoy.
Yeah, when I said which one is it, the other one I was thinking of is Troy, which, like, they're different characters. It's different. One is mythical
but still,
and one is
they came out at like the same time.
In air quotes. Yeah. Right, exactly. And like weirdly tanned people, like.
Yeah. What was really hurtful, like, speaking of just like this oddly timed movie, War of the Planet of the Apes, is I had to start with 28 Days Later.
And then
move on to 28 Weeks Later.
You didn't also have the Sandra Bullock comedy 28 Days? That isn't
That's a regular DVD. It's not a Blu-ray.
Other than that, I watched 6 Friday the 13ths in 2 days. remember a couple weeks ago where I was like, I watched all the Child's Plays, and they're better than you'd think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say that this time.
Not the case for Friday the 13th.
No, Friday the 13th are like, here's why this one is okay, kind of. And a couple of times, no, it's not good. It's...
Are they all on like Netflix or something right now? I think I saw.
Also Shudder, but they're leaving at the end of the month. Yeah, 1 through 8 are on Shudder right now. 9, 10, Freddy vs. Jason and the remake are not on there because that's where the rights changed. And by the way, if you ever need to kill 5 minutes on Wikipedia, there is a crazy battle over the rights to Friday the 13th. That's why there hasn't been a movie in 11 years.
Huh.
I would like to think that's not the only reason why. I mean, we don't need it.
No, it keeps, not only does it keep, like, people are like, nope, we're doing it, and then there's trouble over the rights, and it falls through. The latest one is, for some reason, LeBron James is trying to get it done. Like, LeBron is trying to get his production company going, and the first thing he wants to do is get Friday the 13th back into production.
I wish everybody could watch Camila react.
Can you tweet that clip, by the way?
Yes.
And it's like that GIF that's going around of the yoga thing that, you know what I'm talking about? The ball that people do yoga on and it sways back and forth?
No, I haven't seen that.
Well, it's a trip. Anyway. Hey, let's draw a movie, everybody.
All right.
Once again, Robin has the only current veto until at least until we get another bingo. The number is 1169. We keep getting towards the end of the list. Thank you. Oof. Oh, boy.
I don't know if that's bad or good.
1169 is the Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn, Part 1.
Is that the one where she has the baby?
To the listener at home, Camila took off her headphones, stood up, and has left the studio.
This is me officially quitting the podcast.
I think that is the one where she has the baby.
We have to watch that.
I could be wrong. I can't swear to you it's the one where she has the baby. That might be Breaking Dawn Part 2.
I don't know.
Breaking Dawn Part 2 has the only... There are two good scenes in the entire franchise. One is the baseball sequence in one of the early ones, where it's vampires playing baseball with their superpowers. The other is in Breaking Dawn Part 2. I'll talk about this now, because who gives a shit? In Breaking Dawn Part 2, in what apparently was a diversion from the book, really near the climax of the movie, somebody kills somebody, and there's like a 10-12 minute battle sequence where multiple main characters die, and then they wave it off in a really lame, disappointing way. Like, it's the one that can project the future, showing what's going to happen if they fight as a way of convincing everyone not to fight.
Right.
But the battle sequence was great. What was even better was being in the advanced screening and watching all of the diehard Twilight fans lose their fucking minds because the movie changed and all the characters were dying.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I watched them like years ago because they were all on HBO and I was like, why not? It was like a Sunday, whatever. But like the one thing that I remember that I really, really, really enjoyed, it was that battle scene, I think. And I think it was, I forget who it was, Michael Sheen, his character, he gets killed and the look on his face is like, finally. And I laughed for like an hour after that. That was the best thing about this entire franchise for me.
I mean, I don't have a veto. Like,
I'm not vetoing this. This.
Have you seen any of them, Robin?
So I have seen the part, like, I remember I was in a hotel. I think that Colin and I went to a friend's wedding. And I was flipping through the channels, and this came on, and I literally was like, I wonder if this is the one where she gives birth. And it was. And so I watched that part of the movie because I'm so morbidly curious about it. So anyway, I don't think I've seen this whole movie, and I've never seen any of the other ones. All right. So.
Yeah, I'm less disappointed than I was a week ago. Because I'm genuinely curious, like, now that, at the time, I hated these, and I hated the cast, and now that I genuinely love Kristen Stewart and am slowly starting to appreciate Robert Pattinson, I wonder if looking back, I won't hate them as much.
It'll probably be more like, oh, I hate you for making these poor choices now that I know you can do something.
That's a very good point.
It's a nice echo of the fact that we also watched Mockingjay Part 1. Both series we have only...
I guess.
All right, fine. Stuck in my house for 50 goddamn days, and now I gotta watch Twilight.
If you guys don't hear from me, like, you know, 48 hours or so, you might want to send some help.
War for the Planet of the Apes came out July 14th, 2017. What was the number one song in America?
Despacito.
It was Despacito.
What is that?
It was number one for how many weeks? Like 16 weeks or something like that.
Who is it?
Was the previous record holder. It's Luis Fonsi, I think. What happened was Justin Bieber appeared on a remix.
Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee featuring Justin Bieber. It was number one from May 27th to September 9th. Literally the song of the whole summer. It held that record until Old Town Road broke it. And for all of that, I could not sing you two bars of Despacito.
Oh, it's like, so good.
I'm sure I've heard it, but I don't know in my head which one it is.
Okay.
Like, right. I think of it, and my brain either serves up Ed Sheeran's Shape of You, which is not right.
No. Understand why you're making that connection. I feel like whoever produced Ed Sheeran's Shape of You had just heard Despacito.
Or my brain just goes, no, listen to Cardi B. Like, it's the same year, and it's like, this is what you want, really.
No, it's a good song.
Well, I love doing this podcast, and I just feel so beaten down by War for the Planet of the Apes into Twilight. I'm sorry.
I know, right? Like,
this is what happens when you smite Tony.
This is because I brought up Steve Zahn. Damn you, Steve Zahn. Number one.